Coming to you from Jonesboro, Tennessee, at the International Storytelling Center, we'd like to welcome you to Storytown Radio, Jonesboro's original storytelling radio show.
I'm your host, Lori Olmstead, coming to you from the Volunteer State. And let me tell you, there's no other place in Tennessee where the efforts of volunteers can be felt as strongly as right here in Jonesboro.
Our town has so many events that happen every month, sometimes every week.
It's what makes living here so great. From music on the square, brews and tunes, town tours, the farmers market, and my favorite, the contra dances. And not to mention all the holiday activities.
And let's not forget the big event we plan for all year, the National Storytelling Festival, which brings in over 10,000 people to our town every October.
In a town of just 5,000 and a town staff of under 200, none of these events would be possible without a strong volunteer group.
There are also dozens of organizations throughout town to serve the community, and these are also filled with volunteers from the area.
That's right. And tonight's show is all about honoring our valiant volunteers. Now, I know we have volunteers in our cast. I mean, we're an all-volunteer cast. But I'm also pretty sure that there's a lot of volunteers out in our audience. Now, since we're a radio show, I won't ask you to raise your hands, but I am going to ask you, if you're a volunteer, would you please, on the count of three, clap your hands three times? So those at home can get an idea of the great volunteer base we have here in Jonesboro. Okay, ready? One, two, three.
Those are a lot of hands clapping, which means there's a lot of hands serving right here in our own community. What a difference you all are making. We're telling some of those stories tonight. First, we'd like to thank our sponsors for their generous support of our program.
Without them, we wouldn't be able to share these incredible stories.
We'd like to thank the Tennessee Arts Commission for their support of our program.
We'd also like to thank those wild women of Jonesboro.
And we certainly appreciate their supporting the important stories of Northeast Tennessee.
We'd like to thank Nancy Hope and Odie Major for sponsoring the program.
And finally, we'd like to thank Main Street Cafe and Catering for sponsoring us this season.
And of course, we'd like to thank the makers of Parsley. Yes, parsley, that smooth, easy-going flavor that enhances every meal. Sprinkle it on or garnish a dish.
It just tastes better with parsley.
Mom, do mornings come too early for you? Then frozen toast is the answer. From the freezer to the toaster, what could be simpler than frozen toast? Hit it, kids. Thanks, kids. Volunteers. As we've already said, this community would be lost without our volunteers. We've got so many incredible organizations and events serving the area all year long, and volunteers are the backbone of each and every one of them.
This is the volunteer state, after all.
Go Orange!
Oh, but I'm talking about further back than the football team. During the War of 1812, volunteer soldiers from Tennessee answered the call and helped ensure a victory for a country still struggling in its early years. During the first part of the war, the battles took place along the Canadian border. Distance and geography kept much of Tennessee from being involved. But when war came to the lower country, James Madison called on Tennesseans, who volunteered en masse to defend the Mississippi region, earning them the nickname of the Volunteer State. It was the Tennessee Volunteers who, under Andrew Jackson's command, led the stunning victory at the Battle of New Orleans against England's most elite forces, who were eager to win the port city and all the wealth that had been accumulated there. This turn of events showed the world that the United States' military power was not to be discounted, and that the country was a force to be reckoned with among other nations of the world.
Our volunteer roots run deep here in Tennessee, and we've got stories all about people past and present who have contributed their time and their talents to build our northeast corner of the state.
How do we get these stories? We do what we've always done in this region. We go, we sit with our neighbors, and listen to them tell stories. For our show, we take these stories and put them into script. Then it's performed by the cast. Sometimes the stories belong to us, like the one I told last month was my own story. Sometimes the stories come from someone else, but the cast volunteers to step into the shoes of our neighbors and tell it as if the story were their own. In this way, the stories belong to all of us, the tellers, the performers, and the listeners, like this one. In the old days, we sat on the front porch with our grandparents for entertainment. We didn't have smartphones or Netflix. We would binge listen to our grandparents and aunts and uncles. I said we did it for entertainment, but it was so much more than that. We knew who we were and where we came from through those stories. They have so much to offer us. I was inspired by their strength. I come from people who volunteered to stand on the front lines of social change. They marched so that I could go to school. They boycotted so that I could have a seat on the bus or at the soda fountain counter. Some people don't think of activists as volunteers, but just like the famous volunteers from the War of 1812, to fight the English attempt to oppress our newly formed republic and overtake it with an outdated ideal of colonialism. I've had people in my family volunteer to take up the struggle against the outdated ideal of oppression based on skin color. And today, I stand for justice and equality because someone once stood for me and someone once stood for them. Our stories remind us of who we are and where we fit in the cycle.
Thanks, Michelle. Thank you. That's a really great glimpse into our own volunteer organization, which collects stories and finds ways to share them in the community.
I'm Dr. Jane Toothman. I work with the Pet Therapy Program and Johnston Memorial Hospital. Now, a lot of people might think that is a strange thing, but I have a long history of cutting through tradition around here. I was the first female doctor to open a practice in Wise, Virginia. This was not easy, as it happened during a time when people there had obvious ideas for the roles women should play in healthcare. At first, I didn't exactly have people beating down my door to be seen.
Woman, doctor, whoever thought that was a good idea?
But times change, or in my case, circumstances change. When you're the only doctor in a rural area and someone has an accident, some of those old tunes can change in a hurry.
Doc, doc, help, I'm gonna die.
Let's see what's going on.
Runaway cart. That old mule took off without me and the cart ran over me. Oh, my foot.
Okay, let's just have you lie down up here and we'll see what's going on.
I'm gonna die is what's going on.
You're not gonna die, Mr. Jenkins, but you will certainly need to stay off this foot for about 6 weeks. I'm gonna set the bone. This might hurt a little.
You lied. I am gonna die. Oh!
I stuck it out in Wise, and little by little, I became their town doc. They were even sad when I left to open a practice in Bristol. While there, I saw a real need in another community, so I helped to found the Wesley Medical Clinic in Abingdon, Virginia. This is where my volunteering begins, those many years ago. Today, I continue to serve that hospital in a volunteer capacity as the medical director, providing health care to underserved people in the region. It is here that I am also bringing in pet therapy dogs.
Dog? In a clinic? Whoever thought that was a good idea?
Here we go, round two. Hello there, Mr. Jenkins. I remember taking care of your daddy. Now tell me, what do you have going on today?
They call me the Cookie Lady, but my real name is Vicky Ford. I volunteer over at Sycamore Shoals Hospital, but that's a relatively new role for me. I was a teacher for 30 years.
30 years? Now, I call that service.
Those were wonderful, busy years. When I retired, I remember being in Sunday school. I was deciding on what the next phase of my life looked like, and I remember the leader saying something that caught my attention.
everybody has a lot in life. Our job is to find it. Have you found your lot in life?
I didn't have an answer at first, but what did come to me was that I'd always wanted to go on missions and do volunteer work, but my life as a teacher was too busy for that. Now I felt the call to serve as a volunteer again. I wanted to go on long-term missions, but countries don't allow that with a married couple. You either go together or you don't go. So I've been working on shorter trips through my church that's taken me around the globe, working in small ways to make a difference. I've served in China, Russia, Brazil, and so many, many places. I also know there's a need at home, too. My husband tells me about those needs every day when he gets home from work. The reason he can't go on missions with me is that he is the manager of environmental services at Sycamore Shoals Hospital. The work he does is what inspires me to do more. I think we're good for each other that way. We both love to serve, and we both encourage each other to do more. Last year, he received the Servant's Hearts Award, which is the highest honor given by Mountain States Health Alliance to its team members. He received it for his great servant's heart. I'm so proud of him and the work he's done. To be close to him and to fill some needs in our own community, I volunteer there at Sycamore Shoals Hospital. My skill? I can cook great chocolate chip cookies. I will go in on Wednesdays, bake cookies, put them on my cart, and go through the hospital delivering smiles to people who could really use them. Hi there, would you like a cookie?
I don't know. How much are they?
Nothing at all.
Thank you. It's so good.
And for a second, in what was already a difficult, stressful day, that cookie break put a smile on her face. I don't just share with the patients. You don't know how many nurses look forward to cookie day too. When I leave, I see people with smiles on their faces. I see people filled with a little less anxiety. And I realize, I think that's my lot in life.
Oh, wait, that feels better. Whatever you did, Doc, it worked. And you know what? I don't mind this dog here either. She's a good girl, all right.
Let me check your blood pressure again. Good, it's gone down. I knew Goldie would help.
Well, tell me all about these pet therapy dogs.
We have found, through clinical research, that bringing these therapy dogs into our clinics and waiting rooms helps reduce stress and even decreases pain levels as patients interact with them.
Is that so?
I was waiting for you to tell me it was hogwash. That's what your daddy would have done.
Well, you're probably right, but I'd like to think I have a more open mind. I'm surprised you remember my daddy.
He's not someone you forget.
Neither are you. Doc, one of my daddy's favorite stories happened because of you. You put a cast on his leg so big and heavy, it ensured he couldn't work the field.
I had to. He was determined. I felt bad that he might not get the crops in, but if he didn't take care of his foot properly, he'd never farm again.
Well, let me tell you what happened. Those crops did get put in.
Jim! Hey, Jim!
What is it, Harv?
I just heard from Peggy. John's foot was crushed by the hay wagon. It's broken about three places. He can't do anything. Barbara's due in about a month. Well,
you can't expect her to go out and tend the crops.
Way I see it, he may lose the season.
Daddy, we can't let that happen. If they lose the crops, they'll have to move.
Why did it have to happen this time of year, of all times?
I know. I want to help, but...
What if it was us? What if something happened to you, Daddy, and we were going to lose the whole season? What then?
Well, I expect you and your mama and your brothers and sisters would step in and get it done.
But he doesn't have that. Miss Barbara, she's in the family way, and... JJ hasn't even old enough to milk the cow yet.
My worry, Jim, is Barbara's going to get out there and try to get the work done.
She can't.
Easy, honey. Let's work out a solution.
Let me see. All right, you mentioned the kids. Now, that's not a half-bad idea. What if we got our kids together and also went to the Kendrick farm? See if we can recruit a couple of their teenage boys.
We can't just send the kids.
I'm not suggesting that we do. Now, it's going to be a hardship on all of us, but just for a short time.
What are you thinking?
We get the kids. You and me will take turns each day supervising them and taking them over there till we get the crops in. On odd days, we can work on our own farms.
I'll help.
Of course you will. It was your idea.
I'll help too.
I'll put out the word. Have your farm recruits ready in the morning. I'll be by to pick them up.
Daddy, I'm going to go to collect the tools we're needed.
I remember looking out the window. It wasn't dawn yet. And a dust of cloud kicked up as volunteers from all the area families came to help us so we wouldn't lose the season.
There's no denying it. Volunteers play such an important role in our everyday lives.
Oh, they sure do, Lori. Our organization relies heavily on volunteer workers. Washington County has an organization known as CASA. It stands for Court Appointed Special Advocates. CASA of Northeast Tennessee is a nonprofit, community-based volunteer service organization working with the juvenile courts in Johnson City, Washington, Greene, and Unicoi counties since 1986. They believe that every child has the right to a safe, stable, and loving home. Through CASA, dedicated volunteers are appointed by the judge to advocate for the safety and well-being of children who have been removed from their home because of abuse and neglect. Their goal is to provide a CASA volunteer for each abused and neglected child in our community. That's right, every single child. That's why our volunteers are so important. Every child deserves to have someone in their corner. Our trained volunteers become that child's voice to make sure their needs are identified and addressed in the court system. Our volunteers come from many backgrounds.
I volunteer for CASA. When I taught school, I was an art teacher, so I had everybody in the classroom. I was always frustrated seeing kids coming in and out of foster care, how much they would fall behind, and how much they would begin to give up on themselves because they had no voice about their own condition. That always touched me. When I retired, I decided to volunteer with CASA. I underwent a rigorous training program to prepare me for what I would be doing.
I'm one of the trainers. We provide a 35-hour course so our volunteers feel equipped and ready to handle the goals they need to accomplish. The work they will do will include meeting with all the family members involved. This includes parents, grandparents, aunts and uncles, anyone who is responsible for the care of the child. They will meet with school teachers. They meet with the child and determine if they have needs that are not being met. This could include if they need speech therapy, or if they have bad teeth and need a dental visit. After all the meetings are held, the CASA worker then writes a detailed report. Of course, the final decision is up to the judge, but the CASA worker's job is to become the eyes and the ears for the court as an investigator and become that two-year-old's voice. Because those children, they don't have a voice and they need one.
That's what I love about the work. I know I'm doing something positive for these children. It's this blend of working with family and children and the law. To date, all of my cases have dealt with drug abuse. It is a huge problem here. That's what I walk into. It's rewarding. It's heartbreaking. Sometimes it is terrifying. When I drive out to a home where a child has been taken away for abuse or neglect, I'm not always sure of what I'll find. But I do it. I get past my own worries because I have an important role to play in a child's life. I had some heart and mind-opening experiences during my first few months as a CASA volunteer. I don't know how to put it. Maybe I'll start with the first one. I drove up to this place, a place I wouldn't camp, and people are living there. I'm talking to the people there and begin to realize I have so much in common with them. Which at first struck me as weird, but in that visit, I could imagine being in their shoes. They love their children. They love each other. What separates us is a choice or a series of choices that they made, and I didn't. But the humanity is there. I can work with that. Granted, some cases are more difficult than others. The work is hard, and sometimes I'll finish a case and swear I'll never do this again.
Lark, this is Casa. I know you just finished a case, but we've got an emergency situation. It's an 8-year-old little girl and her 4-year-old brother.
But the humanity of the situation always pulls me back.
CASA needs volunteers. Their work is hard, but without CASA, who will be there to represent the child when a case goes before the judge? If you like to be an advocate, CASA of Northeast Tennessee is looking for people right now. All you have to do is check out their webpage for information. At CASA, our slogan is, "We are for the child."
What a great organization. A great organization serving such a fragile part of our community. Thank you, Lark Foster, and all of the volunteers at CASA. You're making a difference in our community and its future. And it almost feels like we're back in time, because coming up next is the all-volunteer Watauga Valley Fife and Drum Corps.
For those who don't know, the Watauga Valley Fife and Drum Corps is a group of talented musicians who specialize in bringing to life the sounds of colonial America around the time of the Revolutionary War. They play a combination of martial and traditional music of that time period, and the group is made up of volunteers from Elizabethton, Carter County, and surrounding communities.
They're headquartered at Sycamore Shoals State Historic Area in Elizabethton, and serve as field musicians for the park's Living History organization. They not only play this incredible music to capture a point in history, they also take time to educate the public on the history of the Revolutionary War in the Northeast Tennessee region and its impact, as well as its colonial history. As you listen to them play, you can feel yourself transported back in time. Music of an era captures so much and allows us to feel the same thing that was felt by others during the time it was created. In this music, you hear marching, and you can imagine all the militiamen, the Overmountain men, gathering together at Sycamore Shoals to head for Kings Mountain, a turning point in the Revolutionary War. The Overmountain men were also volunteers, some of the first volunteers before Tennessee even became known as the Volunteer State. You can hear their spirit and their determination in the music of this time.
You sure can, Marianne. Would you all please help me welcome them to the stage, the Watauga Valley Fife and Drum Corps.
Thank you.
Drum Corps. Marianne was right. That was an incredible trip to the past. I mean, you can really feel, not just hear, but feel the spirit of the militiamen in that music. Now, we're going to bring you back to more modern times. Imagine, if you will, Main Street Jonesboro, originally an 18th century town, thriving now in the 21st century.
Another uniquely Jonesboro event that could never be pulled off without a team of volunteers is the annual farm-to-table dinner, hosted by the Farmers Market and the Boone Street Market.
I'm telling you, if you don't know about this annual event, which is usually sold out on the first day, well, it's just another one of those things that make living in Jonesboro so fabulous.
The farm-to-table dinner is a special event where you sit down with, 200 of your closest friends at tables with fine linens, glasses, and silverware stretching from one end of Main Street to the other, right in front of the courthouse.
Now, the idea was sort of thought up by Herman from Main Street Cafe. He took the idea to Curtis Buchanan and Karen Childress from the Farmers Market. The idea was to create a gourmet sit-down meal using all locally grown produce and meat and cheese.
They start working on this menu in February, coordinating with the meat farmers, the dairy farmers, and vegetable farmers.
A sit-down meal for 200, beginning with a cocktail hour of wine and beer.
It is a completely different experience for the diner than it is for the server.
To the person sitting down having dinner, it is this utterly charming event filled with talking and stories from your neighbors, and even with people you don't know, because you never know who is going to sit next to you when they yell, "Dinner time!" You just find a seat and sit, and all goes so smoothly.
Meanwhile, for us servers, it's round one.
The first course goes out. The servers go running from one end of the street to the next, rounding the bend and serving the other side of the table.
By the time the other side of the table's served, it's time to start clearing plates for the next course.
Grabbing the next course, relacing the tennis shoes, and we're off! This time a little scarier because this course is a little larger and more delicate, and we want to get it to the people looking the same as the chef prepared it.
And I'm taking the cleared dishes to the dishwashers, who are madly rinsing before the dishes can go into the big machine.
Really? Not yet.
Then it's time to clear away again and start running down the street with the next dish.
Excuse me, could I trouble you for some more salt? Salt? Sure, on my next round.
I seem to have dropped my napkin. Can I have another one?
Napkin. Okay, gotcha. Salt and then napkin.
Main course, now ready. Other dishes are beginning to pile up.
Oh, I'm coming!
Man down! Server to the left, four flip-flops! And he just flopped out of them. Make a detour around tier 47.
He flopped? They told us not to wear flip-flops. Be careful, everyone. I'll be back by to pick you up when I make another pass with the butter and the pepper for the people at seat 86.
Ah, what a relaxing evening.
Don't you think so?
I just love having dinner made for me and served to me.
I don't know how they do it. Everything is so smooth and calm.
Okay, here's your dinner, salt for you. Here's a napkin.
Desserts are ready. These have to go out on the QT so the fresh cream doesn't melt.
If he wanted these to go out fast, he should have made them for the first course. I'm running out of steam.
It's the last round, Katie, the last round. You can make it. You got this. We can do it. Let me tighten your laces. Stand still. Here, take a drink of this water and, oh no, the lace is knotted. I can't get it out.
Cut me, Mick.
But champ.
Do it.
Okay, cut. Now I'll retie the loose ends and there, all set. You got this.
Yo, Adrian!
She's at seat 156. Here's the dessert. You can do it. Go now.
Yes, the farm-to-table dinner serves all the courses from salads to desserts to a table set for 200 right down Main Street. It's a shame they only do it once a year.
Speak for yourself! Maybe you'll give yourself a chance to eat or even serve at the farm-to-table dinner next year. It's quite an experience. Dishes, butter, salt, table 47.
It's okay, Katie. It's okay. It's all over. It's over. Go rest up for next year.
Well, I have another story about the farm-to-table dinner.
For an event that hasn't got a very long history, it certainly has a lot of stories.
I was part of last year's volunteer crew. I knew the day was going to be interesting. When I woke up, it was dark outside. It was morning, all right. I didn't get up too early. It was dark because the sky was black with clouds and they were mocking us.
Mocking you?
Oh, yes, Lori. Those clouds were mocking us. You know how you can look at clouds and sometimes see fluffy little bunny rabbits or maybe a cute little prairie kitten? Nope. Now on this day, there were just a bunch of faces in the clouds and they were openly mocking us.
We had a backup plan to hold the dinner at the McKinney Center if it rained. Karen had even gone over there a few times during the week as the forecast got continuously worse.
Look, I know we have a backup plan, and nice as it is, people want to be on Main Street. That's the fun part. Let's come up with a plan.
So as the clouds continued to move in.
And continued to mock us.
We got our plan ready.
So you think this is going to work?
Oh, definitely. It's idiot proof. I tested it myself. Wait a minute. That didn't come out right.
As people began to arrive for the cocktail hour, we felt we'd gotten the last laugh on the weather. There seemed to be a break.
Yeah, I figured those faces in the clouds looked down and saw we had a plan in place and figured they couldn't scare us anymore. They were taking their raindrops and going home.
But then, just as the entree was served, drip, drop, drip, drop. Oh no, what's this?
The clouds needed one more say in the matter and opened up. But those first four drops were all we needed.
Within 15 seconds, you saw 20 volunteers on each side of the table. On the left-hand side, all the servers pulled up plastic sheeting, and the volunteers on the right grabbed it and pulled it over the seated dining guests.
As the rain came down, the diners were comfortable and dry, enjoying their meals. The only thing they had to do was talk a little louder over the din of the rainstorm.
In a few minutes, the rain passed.
TKO. We knocked the problem out of the way.
And everyone went on through the evening as normal.
Dishes, napkins, salt, table 47, rainstorm!
Well, as normal as could be expected for farm-to-table dinner.
Thank you, Katie and Kate.
Speaking of heritage, Jonesboro volunteers often dress up in Victorian-era costume and host people on guided tours throughout historic downtown. You can see us in bowler hats, top hats, or the women in long skirts and shawls. Well, this summer, you might even see us in a turn-of-the-century swimsuit costume. Worth coming to the tour just for that. Tonight, we've got a story from one of the time-traveling tour guides, Bob Dunn. Bob is sitting in the audience tonight, and it's Bob's birthday. Happy birthday, Bob. Well, since Bob's in the audience, I get to be Bob. I've been waiting to do this a long time, my friend. Let me just take off this bowler hat, which I usually wear, and I'll put on this top hat. And voila! I am now Bob Dunn, the town tour guide for the Heritage Alliance. Wow, I'm ready for the next town tour. But when I first started, I spent nearly a year following Ann and Deborah around, watching their tours and learning from them. I read every book I could on local history, spent a long time learning about the town, the buildings, when they were built, who lived in them, and so I could do more than just give a scripted tour. I wanted to be able to answer questions from anyone, whether an adult traveling from another state or even a country, to young children who come to take part in the educational programs we offer.
Okay, class. Now let's all get together for the tour.
Well, hello. This must be the class from Greenville.
Hey, look at that old man.
You mean old-fashioned looking man?
Sure. Okay.
You're dressed strange.
I'm dressed from the Victorian period of the late 1800s.
Are you from the 1800s?
I am today.
Are you really 200 years old?
What do you think?
He sure does look old.
Hey, watch it.
Are you a ghost?
Am I a ghost? Can a ghost twist his ankle falling in a gopher hole while giving a cemetery tour?
I have a question.
If it's about my age again.
No, sir. I wanted to know what that thing is right there and what it is used for.
Oh, that right there is called an upping block.
Bob has such a great sense of humor. He works so well with the children on the tours and equally as well with the adults.
It was strange how I came to know and do this work, which takes up a large portion of my time. It was, I think, in 2014. Ann and Deb had just started doing town tours. Pam, my wife, knew Deb through the Fiber Guild, the Naughty Ladies and Spinning and Stuff. We were at the farmer's market one Saturday morning, and I think there was some alpaca booths Pam was looking at. Deb was there, and I got introduced. She told me what she did.
And if you know of anyone who might be interested in helping, let me know.
Well, it just hit me. It might be a cool thing to do because, well, I like history. I said I might want to do that.
Really? Well, I'll have to introduce you to Ann and get you some background information. Ann, we found our victim. Our volunteer.
I'm from Virginia, so I knew nothing about Tennessee history, and they were able to give me a ton of reading material.
Here you go, Bob. I thought you might like a little light reading.
I started reading and studying and then tagged on to their tours.
Miss Deborah, is your costume hot?
Well, there's lots of layers to it, I'll tell you that.
Was it this hot in the 1800s?
Yeah. How did people live back then with heavy costumes and no air conditioning?
I ask myself that at the end of every summer tour time. Bob, are you ready to take on a solo tour yet?
All right, cut that out. I tagged along with Deborah and Ann, listened to what they did. By the end of the season, I was doing standalone tours. I also put time in at the Chester Inn Museum. And since I'm local and close, I can be called on for special tours for people who, say, come to the Eureka Inn and are only there for a couple of days and not during the regular season hours. I'll take them around. And last year, all told, I put in 1,600 volunteer hours for the Heritage Alliance.
And speaking for the Heritage Alliance, we couldn't do what we do or expand our program in the ways that we are right now without dedicated volunteers like Bob. Now, we're not asking that everyone put in 1,000 hours.
But you can if you want. Even if it's just one day or a weekend a month or even a year, we're happy for any way you might be able to help us further our mission of bringing the history of Jonesboro alive. Thanks, Bob. He's out in the audience tonight, and I think we should give him a great big round of applause.
People often say that a parent has a chance to shape the lives of their children, but my children shaped my life. Tommy came first, my oldest. He always had this compassion about him. He was so kind, even as a child. Then, when I didn't think I could love anyone as much as I loved Tommy, Carter came along to the delight of us all. Talk about a sense of humor. He would be the popular one in school. Just a real lovable little guy. We were now a family of four. The boys were close growing up, with just a couple of years between them. It did my heart good, because sometimes siblings don't always get along. Tommy was about to go off to college, and we went on a family vacation, a long weekend on an island in Savannah, the four of us, right before the beginning of the school year. Here we were, Tommy about to go off to college, and Carter was going into his junior year. I wanted us all to do something before both boys were gone. We made a lot of special memories. We got back on Monday. Then school started. Carter had his accident on Tuesday. That family vacation, none of us would know it would be our last family vacation together. Our worlds were changed instantly and forever. I found a grief counseling group called Compassionate Friends after Carter died.
Welcome, Zell.
I don't know much about this, but you were recommended.
Compassionate Friends is an organization that helps family members cope with the death of a child. We're here to help you and provide support for you and your entire family.
I don't even know where to begin.
None of us really do at first. That's why we're all here for each other. What we'll do is get to know you and your experience. We'll put together a bereavement package just for your circumstance.
You have such a thing?
Yes, we do. That's what we're here for. It's a place you can also talk with others and meet and seek support from people who understand, because we are all walking the same path.
We were living outside of Atlanta at the time, my husband and I. We went together at first, then, as our worlds were changing, my husband and I separated. But I kept going to Compassionate Friends. Tommy and I began to do things together more, and I really enjoyed doing things with him as an adult. I was proud to see the neat guy he had turned into. In his 20s, we'd grown close enough that he confided in me that he was gay. This was in the 90s, so it was a scary time, and with good reason. Before we turned around, he told me he had HIV. I worried about his future, but we continued to do things together. We'd go to the movies, go out to eat, and try weird new food. I think the sweetest thing he did was, I had a wedding to go to, a man I worked with, and I told Tommy I didn't want to go because it was a really hard time. So my son Tommy came in.
Mom, I'm going to take you.
He was very attentive and compassionate to the people. The people who went to that wedding still come back to me and tell me they remember what a wonderful time they had with him. Before we knew it, he had spinal meningitis. That's a complication from AIDS. I went to care for him in the hospice. I looked around, and all these young people, young men, no one was there for them. But Tommy had me. He was 29 when he died. In the span of 10 years, I had to adjust from being a wife and mother to a family of four to being alone. When Tommy died, I asked myself, what am I supposed to do with the rest of my life?
Zell, come back to Compassionate Friends.
Some friends reached out to me, and I decided I would go back to Compassionate Friends. I was heading to Atlanta to a grief program, and I got totally lost. When I was married, my husband always did the driving. I'm starting to panic, and somehow or another, I heard my son's voice in my head.
Mom, you know where you are. Look where you are. Turn around and come back. You're going the wrong way.
I turned around and saw the hotel. I knew he was in the car. I felt like, okay, I can make it. My angels are with me and it can work. I've had several experiences knowing that they support me and are with me. And I became stronger through Compassionate Friends. When I moved here, they had nothing like that. Well, there was a need, but there was no organization, so I worked to create Compassionate Friends Organization here. And I stayed with it until someone strong enough could take it over. And then I let it go. I started a prayer shawl group. Then when someone was ready to take it over, I let that go too. I was chaplain at the hospital, and I took classes through their special program for residents. I was blessed because when they heard my story and my survival, they said,
"If anybody needs to be doing this, you need to, because you understand the pain and what loss is all about."
Well, I did that for 8 years. The last 2 years, I worked in the chaplain's office in the hospital and contacted people who had a death, checked on them, asked how they were doing, did a lot of their cleanup work to make sure that everyone was getting visited. Then again, I thought it was time to move on and give others an opportunity to serve.
Are you sure you want to leave, Zale? What would we do without you?
Everything survives without you. There is nothing that can't be done without you in there. I learned that. I also learned that while we are here, there is so much we can do to make the world a more compassionate place, like Tommy would want, and to help people face each day with a sense of humor, the way Carter would want it. The life I live now is to honor who my children are and who they were. Where am I now? Well, I'm trying to talk to God and ask God where she wants me to go. I spent a good bit of my time at the senior center, but I feel there's something out there. I can't quite put my hand on it yet or where I'm being guided. So I will wait until I know where I am to go. And in time, I will let that go too. That is what it's like to serve or volunteer. You go in with a full heart while you are needed, and then move on.
Serving and volunteering is not a one-way relationship.
Those who serve receive as much as they give, if not more.
Because we know we are making a difference.
And that makes a difference in us.
Because we know that we are needed too.
Our cast members tonight included
Tom Sizemore,
Marcy Hawley,
Marianne Jaeger,
Jeff Breer,
Kate Breer,
Roger Castle,
Susan Burke,
Rochelle Conley,
Julian Jones,
Dana Keyes,
Jonathan Baker,
Michelle Treese,
Joseph Winkler,
David Keyes,
Sadie Hyatt,
Mary Noel,
Nancy Ray,
Claire Winkler,
Abigail Cowden,
Sabra Hayden,
Don Berger,
Sophia Horton Tunnel,
Brett McCluskey,
Stephanie Murphy, Katie Rosalowski,
Laurie Olmstead,
Stephen Goodman,
Timothy Heron,
Ann Mason,
Jim Reed,
Maggie Polden,
Phyllis Fabozzi,
Ed Pure,
Susan Burke,
Gary Degner.
To all of our volunteers out there, we thank you. Never doubt that you do make a difference, both here in our own community and out there, wherever you call home.